Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Okay, Nick Kiprios, signing season is on the horizon. Free agent day on Monday. Brian Burke's going to talk a little bit about the RFAs. What's up with the UFAs this weekend?
Well, we know this time of year, the legwork's already done. If players haven't made their final commitment, they certainly know what direction they're heading. They already know what the term is, know the ballpark of the money. Not suggesting deals are done. Brian Burke would never have done that as a general manager, or Doug McClain. But we do know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, deals are pretty much
I think it's more like done. This. I think it's more like this. I can't sign you today, but at midnight on the 1st, this is the type of deal we'd probably think about extending.
Gambling here. Brian Burke, there's the UFA speculation. That's the UFA speculation. What about the RFAs? What's happening? Long burn, slow burn? What do you see?
I think slow play. If I think free agents that have gone this far, I understand the risk of a player becoming a free agent. It is significant. For like John Tavares, he had to stay healthy that last year. And so these RFAs, having gotten this close, they're going to wait and see what's out there, see if there is an offer sheet. They're going to slow play it. You can't slow play it too long, though, because if I'm the GM and now I realize the threat of offer sheets is gone, I'm changing my stance.
Plenty on these issues. Also, what's up with Patrick Marleau, Joe Pavelski, Artemi Panarin, Matt Duchene, and others. Hockey Central at noon is on the air.
Live from the Sportsnet studios in downtown Toronto, this is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's your host, Jeff Merrick.
Yeah, the very latest, by the way, as it relates to free agents, Larry Brooks, New York Post reporting, the Rangers are looking at closing a deal for Jacob Trouba, whom they acquired from the Winnipeg Jets, as we all know, in the neighborhood of, here's the term, 7 years, here's the compensation. 7.5 to 8.
That's
a lot of sugar in that coffee, Nick.
It is. We know that if you are a defenseman now that can hit the market in your prime and you are seen as grade A, that number is 9, 10, 11. And then you've got the second group that are underneath that. And we'll see where Myers goes and Jake Gardner go as unrestricted free agents. But that's the ballpark. That's the number between, say, 7.5 and 6. That's that next tier. The guys that aren't in the running for a Norris, but still find themselves munching minutes at 22, 23. If they're not on a first unit specialty team, they're on the second. And that's the going rate.
Burke, any problem with that at all?
No, I think that's a good analysis, but I just... And it's easy on this side of the microphone, but our group, when I say our group, my old group of managers make more mistakes on July 1st than we do the whole rest of the year. It's the term that will kill these teams. It's not the money. The money for Jacob Trouba, let's look at what he is. He's definitely a top four defenseman, but he's not higher than a three. He cannot play the left side. He's got some bite, and he can pound the puck, but he's not an offensive threat. He's in that second pair. That's about right, what the market is for those guys. The term, they're going to choke on the term. And these teams that are given 7-8 year deals, that's why I said at the trade deadline, the best trade at the trade deadline was Mark Stone. The worst trade at the trade deadline was Mark Stone, because they're going to choke on that deal.
Got the best player, but it's a tough term.
Tough term. And with Jacob Trouba, who I like as a player, and like I say, he's got some bite. He's never turned into the offensive force they thought he might be. Mm-hmm. When he first turned pro, the comparisons were to John Carlson. This is a guy with a big shot, right shot, American kid, got some bite, put up good points, and he hasn't.
The one big difference, though, between Carlson and Trouba is Trouba has the potential to step up on a player. I guess that's the one thing we seldom talk about with Jacob Trouba is that
he's got some bite.
He's a shark in the water.
He's got some bite. He's an open ice hitter. He finishes hard in his own end. There's no question. Everyone likes him. I like him as a player. Just talking about his offense is limited. He cannot play the left side. And again, a lot of guys can. I'm not being critical. Just when they made him play the left side, he hated it and he was bad at it. So he's got to play the right side. He's not a first power play guy. He's not a first PK guy on a lot of teams. He might be there. But I'm just saying, I don't mind the money. The term is going to be a problem.
And he can also end up behind his own net when his D partner's already there.
You remember that game.
So, yeah. Listen, good player.
Yeah.
Can, like we said, munch minutes. He can be in your top four. But from here on in, you wonder how much more upside is there in Trouba? How much better can he get? Can he go to that next level? Can he become a complete defenseman that people regard as a top defenseman in the league, or is this it for him?
You ever thought
if it is, it's pretty darn good money.
You ever thought on your old team here, next to New York Rangers? I mean, here's a squad that really quickly, I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were reading concession letters from the general manager. Now, all of a sudden, there's an optimism, and there's Capo Caco on the horizon, and there's this deal, and
Caco.
There's Adam Fox, great player.
No, maybe the next Yager. This next generation Yager. How about that?
This guy was number one on a lot of lists. There's a renewed optimism in New York, and now all of a sudden, and listen, that Metropolitan Division just got a whole lot better at the draft with Hughes and Kako going 1-2. But all of a sudden, there's an optimism once again about the Rangers, and this happened quickly.
But it's still a different feel. Not my era when you just knew the New York Rangers were going to go out there and outbid everybody and act like the New York Yankees in the NHL. That's still not happening. We saw Panarin go in there the other day. Is there interest in Panarin? Absolutely. Are they going to blow their brains out for Panarin? Absolutely not. So if Panarin wants to be a New York Ranger and wants to hang out in Manhattan, there's a deal to be made. But the number I'm hearing on Panarin is as high as anything that we can hear out there for UFAs. And I don't believe for one second that the Rangers are ready to go down that path at this point of their re-lettering.
I think we can call it a rebuild. It's okay. They're
season ticket holder relettering.
I do like that, relettering. Have a thought on the Rangers, Berkey.
Well, there's a very big, Nicky knows this, he played there. There's a big Russian community in New York, mostly in Brooklyn. And it's very attractive to Russian players. That's, you know, Pavel Bure told me that once. He said they can eat authentic Russian food there and not travel too far.
Brighton Beach.
Speak their language. So, you know, they have some attractions there for a Russian player that other places might not. You know, I'm from Minneapolis. There's no Russian community there I'm aware of. But I don't think they're going to blow their brains out. And you do have to overpay a bit because New York, with their combined federal and state tax rate, is one of the highest.
So we had the first Russians win the Stanley Cup. Zubov.
Yes, and the first Russian drafted
Alex Kovalev,
in the first round. And Alex Kovalev.
Karpatsov. Yep. And they took us there for a dinner, team dinner, after we won the cup.
Oh, yeah? How was it?
Well, the meal started at 6:30, and I think the last course was served at about 4 in the morning. I think it was like a 14-course meal.
And
outstanding.
Were you well-refreshed all along the way?
All along the way.
Vitali Kratsov, by the way, one of last year's three first-round picks, has Rangers fans pretty excited as well. I want to get to the RFAs because that seems to be, listen, it's a dinner bell topic, as we talked about yesterday. That's the one that gets everyone singing here.
I want to pick up where Brian left off when we came into the show, and he said that if he doesn't want RFAs to hold up your business. In Kyle Dubas's case with the Leafs and Marner, how do you do that now? I'm curious how you can control that scenario.
I'm not sure you can in Toronto. I'm talking the places I worked other than Toronto.
Okay, how about Carolina with Sebastian Aho?
Well, how about Calgary with Matthew Tkachuk?
How can you control that situation?
Well, first off, what I'm saying is you can't. You got to wait and see what happens. But if it gets to be August 10th, I'm not worried about an offer sheet on August 10th. A lot of teams will be so close to the cap by then with the different players they've signed. 10 teams that are in a potential to offer sheet a guy at big dough now will be off the market. Now my position changes. And now maybe I was willing to talk about a 5-year deal or 6-year deal. Now we're talking 7. So the GM has a lot more authority than people think in these negotiations. Once that sword of Damocles disappears, mm-hmm. and you're not afraid of the offer sheet, You're darn right you dig it.
Well, walk us through a process then. We had Brad Treliving on the show yesterday, GM of the Calgary Flames. And, of course, we talked about Matthew Tkachuk, and he's nothing but complimentary. But Brad's not going to play his hand, obviously. If you're in charge of that negotiation with Matthew Tkachuk, how would it go after this weekend? The player hasn't already signed. It's July 1st.
Okay, so he's not. I don't think he's going to sign. I think everyone's slow playing this for a reason. I think everyone wants to see what's out there. And the fact is a couple teams have approached RFAs already during the dating period here. So there's clearly some interest in offer sheets, or they wouldn't have had those initial contacts. The risk for me, the one that appears most likely for a team to target would be Carolina, because the belief is that the owner won't match an offer above a certain number that teams are certainly willing to pay.
That's believed to be nine, by the way.
Believed to be nine. Two first-round picks. So someone might jump in on him.
His offer right now is, I don't know what it's been in the last 10 days, but he's been sitting on a $6 million AAV.
I'm not sure that's enough for Sebastian. But anyway, not
even close.
Berkey.
So you wait. You say to Matthew, you've waited this long. You deserve to see what's on the menu. Go out there and see what's out there. And you wait a week, two weeks. No
a
problem.
Month. A 2 month? Months, but December 1st.
No, about August 1st, I say, okay, we waited. No offer sheet. Now here's our deal.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get better. So you do have the notion. I think a lot of people think that the agent has all the power here. He's got lots of power till a certain point. And then when no one else is knocking, it might be November.
Didn't work for Kyle Dubas. Well, Kyle Dubas had your blueprint until he went to December 1st.
I know. But the mistake there was signing the guy.
You know, Treliving now in Calgary. How has that scenario really changed much in terms of the pressure that Calgary would be under? They're supposed to compete for a Stanley Cup. Okay, you got the Norris Trophy winner in Mark Giordano, who's in his mid-30s now. You got to win now with those guys. So where is that pressure December 1st? You're going to tell them the offer keeps getting worse December 1st and stay home for the whole season? William Nylander gave those guys a huge lesson, a huge lesson.
Well, I think this, the lesson was he ain't Matthew Tkachuk. The mistake there was not letting him sit out. Caving on a guy like that's a lot different. To me, he's an outlier. I wouldn't cave on that, wouldn't have caved on that player. We said it here before it happened. We said they had to kick his ass till his nose bled.
Yep.
And once he went back over, let him stay if the numbers aren't right.
Here's, you know, and that's where, again, if I'm some of these RFAs now, like, don't expect anything July 1st. I don't expect anything August 1st. How about we go into the season and you lose your 10% buffer from the summer? Mm-hmm. That, to me, even puts more pressure on teams to not match. And now, if you're the Leafs, does that mean that you hold the contracts of Johnsson and Kapanen hostage now? That those don't get solidified because you're waiting on Marner? I don't buy that for 1 second.
That's bad business. That gets us to a smart place, Nick. That gets us to an interesting place because the agreements are there to the GM. The agreements are there. You're the agents for Andreas Johnsson and Kasperi Kapanen. How long are you waiting? How long do you give the Maple Leafs?
3 weeks tops. So if it's true that they've reached an oral agreement on that this is what we'd be prepared to do, but we're not filing it today. We want to preserve our flexibility. I'm fine. I got the money I wanted. I got the term I wanted. But I'd give them 3 weeks. And I'd say, now we register the contracts.
And Nick, if you're Camp Marner, what are you doing with this type of information?
You're sitting. You're just not moving. You're doing what you've done for the past 2 months. Mm-hmm. You just keep rolling it. And then if you got to regroup, if you get your offer sheet, great. If you don't, you keep negotiating until you get a number and a term from the Leafs that you're happy with. That's the way it worked for Nylander. And Nylander got his money.
Elliot Friedman on the podcast yesterday, 31 Thoughts, and on the Fan 590 morning show this morning, was talking about the Maple Leafs offering the Marner camp a 2-year deal, somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million, with the premise that the salary cap right now is 81.5. suspect it will be flat again next season, but will rise in the season after that when his two-year contract would expire. At that point, talk about the big number, big digit contract. Would that fly?
No.
Not now, not in August. For me, that is your last case scenario. That's a deal that I'll consider December 1st. Why would I do a two-year deal right now and now take on the whole risk now for the next 2 years of possibly getting hurt? You know, just I got to go out there and try to.
You think it has to be the big ticket long-term deal for
Marner? No. I'm not even signing an eight-year deal. I want Auston Matthews' deal. That's what I want if I'm Mitch Marner.
I think that's 100% right. I've had to agree twice now with Nikki in 15 minutes, and it really bothers me.
Yeah.
But I think he wants the same turn. And this is the sequence of mistakes. And again, it's easy to pick on teams, except that we laid out this blueprint before it all happened. That you're talking William Nylander's a knight if you're playing chess. He's an important piece, but he's not a vital piece. You've got to win that one because the king and the queen are coming up next. They caved on him, overpaid him, and taught a valuable lesson that the threat of a holdout, the Leafs are going to cave. Then they gave Matthews a five-year term. And again, I had no problem with the money on Matthews. I had a problem with a five-year term. They should have got a sixth year at that kind of dough. Now, if I'm Marner, I'm like, I led your team in scoring the last 2 years. We're talking a five-year deal. I know he's a center. I know I've got to take less. But if we're talking $10 million instead of $11.5 million, we're talking 5 years.
And I know it sounds crazy too, but even Matthews, I think Matthews could have ended up with 13, 14 over five. I mean, it's a moving target. These guys, the league put all their trust into this generation of, and there are superstars. They're my Gretzky, Lemieux, Yzerman. They're it now. The whole league's based on their faces, their images, their ability out in the ice. Why they're not asking for max 20%, 18% of contracts that they're eligible for is beyond me. They're the league, all of these guys.
See, and Nikki comes at it as a former player, and I come at it as a former GM. What I'd say is they're really important players. And in my mind, I'd rather pay Mark Giordano or TJ Brody than Matthew Tkachuk. I actually think they should go to a four-year entry-level system. Now that these kids are coming in with such proficiency, I don't want to pay the young stars. I want to pay the guys that have done it. And it's not saving money. I don't want to save
that part of the system's.
Hang on. I don't want to save money on Auston Matthews because I'm paying it to someone else. It's not like I'm banking it. So I don't think it's all over. I think the union's going to have a big fight over this. In the union membership, there's 800 guys.
Yeah.
There's only 20 of these players.
They're already fighting. Trust me.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
So when do you get paid? And do you want to win or do you want to get paid? So if.
Both.
The notion, I don't know. I think if you go for the big dough on a team that's choking on it, you want to get paid more than you want to win. If you're asking for Connor McDavid $12.5 million.
At least they were smart enough to ask for 8 years on it.
They got 8 years.
Yeah.
So, and same thing. I have no problem with what they paid Auston Matthews. I don't mind. There's a lot of old school GMs that hate players making money. I like when players get paid. I like when players outperform themselves or the expectations and get paid. So it's not, I'm not this crabby old guy saying, oh, Gretzky never made that kind of money. I'm well past that. I have no problem with the money they paid Auston Matthews. I have a problem with the term. They should have got a sixth year. And it was a mistake not to. And now I'm with Nikki. If I'm Marner's agent, I'm like, okay, let me get this straight, Toronto Maple Leafs. You want me to take $1.5 million less and play for 10. Okay, I'm a winger. I get it. He's a center. But I led your team in scoring for 2 years. If I'm taking less, for sure I'm getting the same term. I'm not locking myself up for 8 years. I'm going to be a UFA in 5 years. It's that simple. And that's the rock and the hard place they're in right now.
Yeah, I don't get this winger, centerman, less money. Puck's dropped. He's the playmaker. He's the engine. He's the guy that's setting everybody up. He turns into a centerman. How's that? As soon as the puck's dropped.
We're seeing more of the playmaking winger now, more so than ever before, led by Pat Kane. You see these every year in the draft, like that playmaking winger is becoming more of a thing each and every year in the NHL. I am curious about something you guys mentioned a couple of seconds ago off the Mitch Marner page, but as it relates to Sebastian Aho, and Nick, you've talked about this for a couple of weeks now. If there is one player.
Yeah.
Where the team is really not going to match and it's not going to cripple you financially, is that not Sebastian Aho of the Carolina Hurricanes? And the number believed to be, over under $9 million.
If someone offer sheets him and it's under, I think, 10-5, then it's just two first rounders, a second and a third. So you're not even giving up four first rounders for him. And now you factor in, you've got an ownership group that doesn't believe in fair market value, and you front load this contract, Brian, where in a calendar year, this guy can end up with over $20 million,
yep.
22, 24.
Yep. That's
you got yourself a player. You got yourself a player at two first rounders, a second and a third. How many teams would make that trade at the deadline for Sebastian Aho?
That's the hole in the dike. That's the one where I think everyone's going to slow play it with the RFAs, except that one. That one has potential to blow up at midnight. And I think Braden Point is still a possible target.
It sounds very much, though, like Braden Point doesn't want to rock the boat and wants to re-sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't think he's taking a significant discount based on performance, but it seems as if things are pretty quiet with
Points. Does he become the highest paid player?
Well, that's the big question. Does he end up earning more than Nikita Kucherov? Is he above $9.5 million? Braden Point.
Not for me.
All day long. All day long. That's where the market's gone. That's where the needle's moved.
Yeah.
The needle's moved. Joe Sakic in Colorado, his issue isn't necessarily paying Rantanen. It's how much he wants to pay more than MacKinnon is making. Well, that's the issue.
MacKinnon's the value contract in the NHL. That is the...
No, MacKinnon's the freebie of the NHL.
That is the most team-friendly, based-on-performance contract in the NHL.
It's moved. Yeah. And what makes this scenario so fascinating is the high-end player's needle is moved, but revenues have flattened. And the pressure on teams now, and you got a huge market in Toronto where they ask their season subscribers to pay top dollar, and somehow you got to go back to them and say, we lost a key player potentially in Marner because of why, right? Because the cap didn't go up. I'm sorry, but we thought the cap was going to go up. We didn't, and we lost Marner. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Oh, I don't think they're going to lose Marner.
Right? I'm just saying, potentially it's there.
So, you think this gets done, Brian?
I think it gets done.
Carolina, great run. Great run. Fans buy in.
Tough to go back to that marketplace without Sebastian.
Now you've ended up selling all these new season tickets. They're going to go back and say, who's my goalie? Where are the goalies from last year? Oh, they're gone. Oh, where's that young, great player, Sebastian Aho? Oh, listen, he's gone.
A lot of money.
It's tough. That's the reality of this particular salary cap when revenues don't go up.
You think this is getting done for Marner, Brian, next season?
Yeah.
How does it play out in your mind?
Like he's going to sign for 5 years at a number that he can live with, and I think he does want to stay here right now. I think he wants to see if they can win. And then my question is, as soon as he signs for $10 million, I'm like, okay, what about some of the low numbers on the team? Some of the defensemen. Who's going to play defense for this team? Is this going to be the Marlies?
You've heard now for 6 months, this guy really wants to be here. He loves being a Leaf. He really wants to stay. I'm sitting there going, Is he acting like a guy that really wants to stay right now? And again, maybe he gets really his back right up against the wall and he goes, oh, you got me. I really wanted to stay. I'm sorry. I'll take the discount. I'm not saying that can't happen. That could happen. But right now, I'm not exactly putting all my money on it.
And Nicky's closer to that situation than I, but I think he does want to stay right now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to stay and wanting to get paid. Those aren't incompatible.
Well, something's got to give.
It's going to be a five-year term.
How much? Okay, how much? And so then Matthews and Marner would expire at the same time?
Yep.
Kyle Dubas would...
Why? Didn't it work for Chicago with Kane and Taves? Isn't that the way that played
out?
Those
aren't five-year deals, right? Though. Those aren't five-year deals.
They were before. They're second contracts, Jeff. We're five-year deals at the same term. The problem in all of this was that they were essentially Kane and Taves for the Leafs. They needed to be looked after. They needed to be taken care of together. And what did they do? They ended up separating them. And one got looked after early, the other one's sitting waiting.
Well, hang on a second. Then, because the Marner camp said, missed. We're not negotiating during the season. And Austin Matthews' camp was happy to do so.
Jeff, I'm talking about getting way ahead of it. They needed, before that, it was just shaping up that way. The problem is they didn't really read how good Marner was or how quickly he would become a star. They misread that. And then they were slow on it, and they just couldn't catch up. And that's why they're in this mess right now, because they misread this kid right from day one, right from the contract negotiations where he ended up without his B bonuses. Matthews ends up making $4 million a year. Because he doesn't get those bonuses, he's at $1.5 million. So that's $2.5-3 million right off the bat. He's feeling like he got ripped off. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't catch up. And then Tavares comes in, and then that further pushes down the importance of getting him signed. And it just seems like they've been chasing this Marner thing from the moment that he was drafted.
How do you see it playing out then? Brian says 5 years, $10 million is done.
We've been talking offer sheets since November, and the reason why we were talking about it, we just don't make it up. It's what the industry talks about. It's what the agents have been talking about since November, December. Coaches, general managers, players, everybody, scouts. That's the banter. So I'm not...
You see an offer sheet from Marner out there.
I'm not... Everything we hear, I just came from the Players Association. We had the golf charity event out in Glen Abbey. And you talk to those guys. They all think that it's legit.
That the offer sheet is coming from
That the offer sheet's coming.
What's the price tag?
Right? It's got to be... For Mitch Marner to get an offer sheet, he has to become the highest paid player in the National Hockey League. Has to. There's no offer sheet that comes in under Connor McDavid. You've got to go north of 13. So you might have to go 14, 15. You might have to go 20%.
There's a team out there that's going to give Mitch Marner 20% of the cap.
I'm saying where it needs to go. I'm not saying that. I believe that it's out there because, again, when I tell you that's the talk amongst everybody in our industry, I don't know what the talk is amongst owners. Okay? And you've lived it your whole career. You can say whatever you want. You can believe whatever you want. You can have all the people underneath you saying and doing the right things. Go up to your owner and say, now I need you to sign off on this. And it might be a different story. And when you're in a partnership, in a board of governors meeting, and we're all in this together, I just don't know whether or not ultimately that gets signed off. It may stop in your meetings on whether or not we're ready to make an offer sheet.
Well, I think there's a notion out there, which you're perpetuating, that these teams act in concert, and they must be the worst colluders in the history of business. Because they will gladly stab each other in the back. If someone misses the date to send a qualifying offer, there'd be five offers on the player within 6 hours. So it doesn't stop in the meeting. We never talk about salaries. Gary might mention where he thinks the cap is going. Mm-hmm. There's never been, and I've been doing, was there for 31 years, so never a discussion about this is out of control, this is that. They're going to do what they think is best for the team. I would say to my owner, if he said we want to spend 20% of the cap on any one player, I'd say, okay, you're guaranteeing that we can't win. You're guaranteeing we can't win. 20% on one player, 80% for the other 22, you're guaranteeing that we will not be successful.
How about 20% on a three-year deal or a four-year deal? How's that guaranteeing it?
Well, 20% at this, nah, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't give up four firsts either.
See, that's the other part of it is
there's some teams with a ton of room.
And if so, you're also giving up four first round draft picks.
And even if they're late for it, even if your team's good,
well,
even if their pick's 25 to 32.
Leafs gave one to Carolina, so technically they might be getting just three for Marner.
They're trying to keep the band together, though.
You're only down to three first rounders right now. We gave one to Carolina.
We got to hit a break. More on this. I want to get your thoughts on Matt Duchene and where he may end up. And ditto for Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky. Hockey Central at noon continues. Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, the Fan, on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Okay, a little bit of business done by Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs while we were away. Kasperi Kapanen signing a three-year extension. It is official. 3.2 is the AAV. Andreas Janssen, four-year extension. That carries a 3.4 AAV. So there's your Patrick Marleau money.
The Kapanen surprises me.
Coming in at three years? Term or money?
Just surprises just you? Not waiting. See, that to me is an offer sheet that makes sense to get him up to $5 million for second and third round picks.
So first, second, third. Is six down to four is a
what,
first,
what's
a
first, second, and third?
Third?
As high as what, six?
Four. First, second, and third is 6.3.
Yeah, you don't need to go 6.3. What's right. Five?
So first, second, and third. The first and third is 4.2.
See, I'll give up a first and a third all day long for Kapanen. All day long.
It's an easy match for
great,
Toronto. That's an easy
really
match
good
for
player.
Toronto, though, isn't it?
No, it's not.
No?
Every dollar counts in Toronto, Jeff.
Get
it's
that.
Not an easy. It's not an easy match. You'll match it. I'm sure you will. But again, okay. Short term, you match it. Long term is. By the way, how are we going to get a defenseman? Who's leaving? Nylander isn't going anywhere. Kapanen, you just signed. Janssen, you just signed. Kadri, to me, is still the best value out there at 4.5. Who's leaving for a defenseman?
Ricky, what do you think of these deals?
I think they're both sensible. I got no problem with either one of them. It's
they're good signings. They are good signings.
Yeah, and I have no problem with giving up a first to move Marleau's money. To me, where Toronto picks to move $4 million, the buyout number is 375. I thought Toronto had a good weekend at the draft and moving that cap space, maybe creating that cap space.
Okay, so there's the latest.
Marleau, by the way. So what do we say cap-wise? Where's Carolina on their floor?
Are they there yet? Are they at the floor, no. Carolina? 59.5 in cap.
So minus 30.
Right, I was told that that actually Carolina made a play for Marleau to stay in Carolina.
They did.
Yeah.
For
right?
Sure they did, yeah.
Yeah, because they need every dollar that they can get.
Wouldn't that be a nice problem if you were a GM, you had to get to the floor?
So it's got to be a foregone conclusion. Marleau goes back to San Jose.
I agree.
Come on, where else is he going to go? Wilson's got a pretty good story there with the longevity, the streak, all of it.
Where's Pavelski end up then?
Dallas.
If Zuccarello doesn't re-sign, I think Dallas is a real serious candidate.
Zuccarello, maybe Buffalo?
Zuccarello to Buffalo?
Zuccarello's
looking
the talk.
For 5 years?
That's the type of guy that could really help a lot of those young kids in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. Yeah, the Zookster.
Matt Duchene, it seems like a foregone conclusion. It's Nashville. Montreal in that running as well? You guys have a thought on Matt Duchene?
Well,
no, I don't.
Everyone says Nashville, but does David Poile now play that no state tax card? Does he, can he get him for 8.5? Like it's 10 anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I like Duchene, but I don't know. I'll take him over Skinner right now, but that's a lot of money.
I wonder about Nashville, two of the players like Anders Lee. That may make some sense.
Anders Lee, for me, may still go back to the island. You got to think that Lou's going to try to hit the home run with Panarin. But if they fall short, you think Lee gets his money and his term out of Lou? I think there's a deal to be made for him to go back to the island if Lou doesn't land the big prize.
Artemi Panarin.
That's the big prize I'm talking about, right?
The foregone conclusion that him and Bobrovsky are going to Florida, although the Islanders are certainly in there. Another phantom teams? Or is this just going to be...
There's not many. There's not many. Florida. And the one thing I keep hearing is that they want to play together. Panarin
and Bobrovsky?
Yes.
Both have the same agent.
So how many teams can do that? Florida. And the island.
Yeah. And the Islanders still have not re-signed Robin Leonard, so there is a position there. Could you see that, Berkey?
Well, it's mind-boggling to me that Leonard is a problem signing after the support system they put in with him, saved his career, maybe his life for all we know, all the issues he's had, and the way they created an environment where he could have this kind of year, and the notion that they didn't come up with something for the next 2-3 years at a reasonable dollar, not paying them for just this year alone, mm-hmm. is mind-boggling to me.
Although we had been hearing going back to last summer, the long-term play when he becomes a UFA is for the Islanders to have a good swing at Sergei Bobrovsky. It's been out there for a while. And then Leonard happened, who said, okay, well, all the Bobrovsky stuff's going to go away. Here's a Jennings Trophy. What a turnaround, not just on the ice, but off it as well for Robin Leonard. But here we are, asking about the goaltending on...
I don't think you can underestimate also the need out of maybe the Islanders, and we saw it last weekend with Jersey to sell in that competitive market and get some real sizzle. And Leonard's had a great year, but he would not have a ripple effect like Bobrovsky signing in the island. And Jersey, relatively new ownership group, they got to sell. They got to put people in. That's PK Subban. Come on. You got the best guy who can make the most noise to create a buzz in New Jersey now. So Islanders, Lou, they're going to be heavy players here. They're going to be swinging a big bat, I think, in the next 72 hours.
If they're thinking of signing these guys as a package, they better be careful about the term on the goaltender. They better be very careful.
I don't know if I think he should be okay with 5 years.
That's four is as far as I'd go. Maybe five if I had a gun to my head. But Panarin's going to want as many years as he can get. And again, my only caution is people should have watched the playoffs very closely if they're going to throw huge money at this guy.
Wanted to get a couple of thoughts out of you guys. Brian, you sit on the selection committee, so it's sort of an obvious one as well. I know it's a story that's a couple of days old, but nonetheless, Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2019. Haley Wickenheiser, Sergei Zubov, Guy Carboneau. Who else do we have going in? Jim Rutherford is a builder. Jerry Yurko is in. And Vaslav Nedimansky as well. And that one surprised a lot of people. I don't know that I have ever been part of a conversation about the Hall of Fame where that name has been brought up. Was this the first time that name has been brought up?
No. Now, we're not allowed to talk about our deliberations, but I don't think Lanny McDonald's going to call me and complain if I give a little detail to it. Nedimansky's been carefully considered in the past. Okay. He had a great career. He was the first guy to walk out of the Eastern Bloc, left everything behind him, took great risks to come to North America. His family suffered consequences. This guy was a premier player, a 35, 40-goal scorer with Detroit when he first came in. very elegant player, like a Jean Beliveau type player. He's deserving. I'm really excited about this class. Guy Carbonneau, the league is acknowledging, the Hall is acknowledging the value of a top two-way player, and I think that's a great pickup. Zubov was one of the great defensemen in his era, but there are always guys ahead of him on the All-Star team named Scott Stevens and Ray Bourque and Brian Leetch, so he never got acknowledged like he should have, but great player. Haley Wickenheiser, we didn't even discuss Haley Wickenheiser.
That's a layup.
We didn't even talk about her. It's like, really? We're going to talk about her? And then Jim Rutherford, who's been done such a great job as a general manager, and Jerry York, who's won 1,070 games in the NCAA, and he just signed an extension, for God's sake. So most guys dream of coaching 1,000 games in college. He's won 1,000 games in college.
Zubov, Nick Kypreos, former teammate.
Should have got in last year. Berkey dropped the ball on that one. So he, like usual, he makes up for it in many different ways. Mm-hmm. But just can't ever recall playing with someone with so much poise and
still can't believe they traded him.
Stay so calm under such pressure, and to watch him and Brian Leetch together.
Puck on a string. Puck on a string.
We had our 25th anniversary. It was almost comical to hear like Kevin Lowe, Jay Wells, Doug Lister talk about themselves like they were just seat fillers. Their only job in the playoffs in 1994 was to get Zuby and Leachy enough rest
to get back out there.
Yeah. Just they wouldn't even watch the play. They're just like waiting for them to come off the ice. Oh, it was just
well. If you look,
that's how good they were. They controlled the game.
Listen, points per game for defensemen. It's Paul Coffey with a bullet. No one's catching Paul Coffey, but. You know, Sergei Zubov is in that group, and Brian, you know this part of the selection committee. You've gone through all of this, but for our listeners that may not know and may look at Sergei Zubov and say, why Sergei Zubov? He's in company with Nick Lidstrom. He's in company with Rob Blake. He's in company with Chris Pronger when it comes to points per game. That's where Zubov is. But to Brian's point, he always played behind guys and always overshadowed by guys. But listen, Nick, you sing from a hymn book that is long. With a lot of ex-players that scratch their heads about
He needed to stay in 95. We got eliminated by the Legion of Doom. Mm-hmm. But he needed to stay for us to have a legitimate shot at back-to-back. Didn't happen.
You like this class?
Yep, very much. Very much.
Every year it's a good class. Every year. These are historical names in our game.
It seems as if. And inducting more women is the obvious one, but it seems as if the Hall now more so than ever, correct me if I'm wrong, is paying more attention to international accomplishment than ever before.
Yes.
True or false?
It is the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the NHL Hall of Fame.
So when are you going to put Paul Henderson in then?
Well, he's been discussed.
Get her going.
Mike Ruzioni is not in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
Jim Craig.
So get him in, too. It's a big deal.
I don't have any pull on that one.
Everybody in. It is what I like about it is there's a number of different types of people that go in. And as much as Nedimansky may have seemed like a strange one, it does give us an opportunity to talk about that story and what he did and how he came over. Listen, I was a kid watching him play with the Toros. And watching this guy.
It's the only ticket I could get. I couldn't get these tickets.
I'm the same as you, Nick. I go Toros games, right?
He had
Wayne Wood, John Garrett, and Net.
He had huge numbers for the Toros.
Yes, he did. And the Detroit leading scorer,
Tommy Shotgun Simpson.
First 50 in Toronto, Nick. You know that. Well, apologies to Rick Vive. Simpson did it first.
Heartthrob, Mark Napier.
Good-looking guy. Great feathers. Great feathers.
I remember a front page of the Toronto Star. I think he was on a heart-shaped bed. My sisters had a big crush on him.
Hey, signing season is on the horizon. Free agent day.
I didn't
Monday.
Just embarrass you, did I, Mark?
Maybe just a little bit. Our coverage begins at 11 o'clock Eastern. Please join us. Expecting a flood at about 12:01 of all the UFAs that are poised to sign. On behalf of Brian Burke and Nick Kypreos, Jeff Merrick signing off. Thanks for a great season of Hockey Central at noon.